Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. It's quarter number one, which means we'll be starting with the news. Before we get there, though, Dustin, welcome in. You had an eventful weekend, I understand.
I sure did. We had nine children between the ages of 6 and 11 at a sleepover at my house Saturday night. And, boy, it was exhausting. Like, I've got friends who have five kids, and, like, my heart went out immediately. I know we had more kids, but it was one night. Like, I cannot imagine my life being quite like that. It was a wild ride.
My congratulations to you for just surviving it, Dusty. And it's why I've always said to people, it's much better to be an uncle than to be a father.
Pack them up and give them back.
Exactly. All right, Dusty, let's move on to the Penn State news of the week. Although your weekend sounds very exciting, there was also some activity on the Penn State recruiting front. Let's start with that hotbed of Penn State recruiting. Penn State now owns Alabama, right? Dakari Nelson became commitment number 15. He's a big safety, listed at 6'3", around 200 pounds, from the state of Alabama. How about it?
That's two Alabama kids in the span of 1 week. And clearly, I mean, I think they're doing something to make that so. You know what I mean? I think there's somebody responsible for that. And I feel like I saw a lot of Alan Zamitis love going around on social media over the weekend. So maybe he's really spearheaded part of that effort. But they're going into SEC territory. They're getting two really good players, legit four-star players. This one, Dakari Nelson, and he's an interesting player too. You know, having watched his film, I mean, he's used in a lot of different ways, and just trying to assess, you know, what he shows on film and how it translates to the next level. He does look like a guy whose frame can still fill out some, and I would expect it to fill out some over the course of the next calendar year, where he's maybe more 6'3", 210, 215, and is somebody who can maybe play that safety linebacker hybrid role that all defenses really have now, but Penn State really likes it too. Looks like I feel like once he gets going, he's fast enough. But I don't know if he's got the feet or the agility or the nimbleness to really make it as a field safety. So he'll be a unique weapon for sure at the next level. And I really like him to be down in the box, playing physical, and use that versatility that he has for defense's advantage. And I think he's going to be an interesting player. I think the best player comparison, I think, will be Marcus Allen for the size and what he's able to do. I feel like Marcus Allen coming out of Maryland a while back, He showed more of that physical play on film, where Dakari Nelson has been used more as like a cornerback, wide receiver, safety, where you saw him lined up one-on-one with guys. I mean, I think he's got the ability to do that at the high school level, but he'll be a really unique asset at the next level. And I'm really curious to see how that frame fills out, because over the course of the next year, that's going to dictate a lot as far as how Penn State would end up using him.
Don't you think this is what a position now that Manny Diaz is out actively looking for? Now, we all know Jonathan Sutherland is going to be essentially playing that position in the 2022 season, but this is not unusual for Manny Diaz. He likes having that hybrid guy on the field. This looks like a product of Manny Diaz, what he's looking for.
It would seem to be that way. I mean, I think he really fits in with what he's going to be trying to accomplish on defense. But I do feel like having a Swiss Army knife type guy where you can give different looks, you can have different packages. I think everybody, college and pro alike, are looking for that. And Nelson is a really interesting one, though. It's not like he is used in a way that would suggest it now. He's just used like a good athlete at the high school level. He just happens to be huge. And I feel like because he has all that experience, you know, talking to Anthony Poindexter a couple weeks ago, for example, he was talking about Keaton Ellis and he was talking about Zaki Wheatley. And the fact that those guys accumulated a lot of multi-position experience in high school facilitated their quick transition from cornerback to safety because they had experience there. So now you've got Nelson coming in as a cornerback slash safety who really plays those roles, who might end up being more of a linebacker. You don't think that's going to be a unique package in a linebacker slash safety? I think that length that James Franklin really likes to talk about, making the field feel smaller, he's going to be huge, and he's going to have a long wingspan, and you're going to see them use that. I do think that Manny Diaz is going to target this type of guy, maybe more so than some other coordinators.
Let's go way back to Tuesday earlier this week, this past week. Tamarian Parker, also from Alabama, he's, depending on which rating service you go to, top 100 player at least, top 50 player according to some people. And in this day and age of NIL, how do you get a player like that, Dusty, out of Alabama?
I don't know. I know this is quote unquote old news by now, but I wanted to talk about him because I love this kid. You know, I think what's keeping him from being a five-star, just my opinion, is that there's not elite twitch to his game. You know, he's not firing off at an unbelievable rate. He is just a really pure, really polished pass rusher, and he doesn't quite fit into that elite of elite territory. But I would say the same thing about back in, 2017, Yitor Gross-Matos was the same way. He didn't have elite twitch either. He didn't have elite burst. I think Parker might be even a little bit quicker than Gross-Matos was back in the day, but he has just all the moves. You know, it's really rare, I feel like, that you can turn on the tape for a guy and see him winning outside, inside, power, quickness, stutter steps, long arms. I mean, he wins one-on-one battles in a wider variety of ways than I think I've seen from really any Penn State edge rush prospect of the James Franklin era. And whether that translates into, you know, elite production at the next level, you can't say for sure, of course, but, you know, he just strikes me as a guy who you fine-tune some of these things about his game. You know, he's 6'4", 255. Jameel Lyons, the other four-star edge rusher in this class, also 6'4", 255. Chop Robinson, who transferred from Maryland, also 6'4", 255. It seems like they're lining up this body type and this type of edge rusher to really feed into their system. But I love what Tamarian Parker brings to the table. How and why, you know, you're able to pull him from SEC country. You obviously watch these guys who are from the South. I think Penn State has had a couple kind of sour experiences getting an early commitment from a guy from the South and trying to hold on to that the whole way through. There are more forces pulling against that, you know, when a guy's outside of your traditional recruiting footprint. But you know, I clearly Tamarian Parker and his family had an unbelievable official visit. He said, you know, he seemed to see everything he needed to see. I don't know where NIL money comes on the priority list for him. I don't know whether Alabama was offering him or that kind of thing or not, but Penn State's lucky to have him. I know that.
And Dustin, I saw somebody talk about this on Twitter, where else to get great information, right? About wondering if the Penn State Auburn series, home and home, was bringing Penn State into the homes of these players from Alabama. I'm not so sure you could draw a straight line to these couple players, recruits from Alabama, to that game, but I think you can say there is a relationship by getting into the South to play a game, being on Southeast Conference television this year, it'll be the CBS game of that week. You know, it'll be on at 3:30 CBS, where all those Southeast Conference teams are used to playing, and where I'm sure the kids down south are watching. Has to at least there be a relationship to that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Auburn football players and Auburn fans really probably didn't pay a whole lot of attention to what Penn State was or wasn't doing prior to this. So now Auburn goes into Beaver Stadium last year. That environment is crazy. And I'm sure maybe they had some cursory knowledge of what a whiteout looks like. So now you have fans from that region, from that fan base, from that state tuning in and really seeing with their own eyes, like how electric that is. And maybe paying a little bit closer attention to all the guys that Penn State got drafted then too, and realizing like, okay, this was a more national program than I really thought. You know, down here we're insulated in the SEC. So I do feel like there's a relationship there. And I do feel like if there was some momentum to gain from that experience and from this next way, this next segment of the home and home, James Franklin and his recruiting staff, I'm sure, pressed the gas to make sure that they got whatever type of bump they could get inside the state of Alabama that they got it. So I feel like it's not coincidental. You know, I think probably it's anecdotal at this point how much impact that had. But look at these two guys from the state of Alabama. Like, I can't think of many. You know, I think Christian Campbell was from Alabama. Torrence Brown was from Alabama. Not a whole lot of prime time. Those were three-star guys. Not a whole lot of prime time prospects have made their way from Alabama to Penn State. 2 in 1 week in the middle of the home and home. There has to be some kind of connection there.
Exactly. And I think we'll see more connection as we go forward. One last note. Yazid Haynes, who a couple months ago was committed to Rutgers, his recruitment blew up. He's a wide receiver. He went to camps, started running sub 4.440s, gets an offer from Penn State that he accepts, now tweets out that, lo and behold, Georgia just offered him. And we've seen this story before. Concerned about Yazid Haynes maybe looking south?
A little bit. I mean, the most recent experience with Joshua Miller, flipping to Georgia after getting that Georgia offer. And then it did seem like Yazid Haynes had a big-time rivals camp in May and then was like, oh, I think that's going to open up some doors for me. And then the Penn State offer came along and he jumped on that. So there's a little bit of precedent there that he was looking for something bigger, got it, and now Georgia could be conceived as something bigger as well. So I don't know if it's not impossible. Let's put it that way.
He's climbing on up there, Dustin. He's working his way up. All right, that is it for quarter number one. In the news, stick around. Quarter number two, we're going to get back to our KSN Top 40.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante, along with Simply Dusty. For those who don't know what I'm talking about here, we, in our podcast here, Dustin signs in, and he signs in with a different name every week. One week it was Dustin in the Wind. This week it's Simply Dusty. Is this kind of like a thing where you're going to start going by one name, Dustin? You know, like Cher and Dusty?
I'm transitioning to a symbol, like Prince, except mine will be a burrito.
But it fits. It fits. All right, Dusty, it's time to get back to our top 40. I don't have numbers 40 through 31 in front of me, so we're not going to review it. If you want to know who was numbers 40 through 31, tough. Or just go back and look through the podcast and you get to all that information. But today we're starting out with number 30. And of course, as we do the countdown here, Dusty, we get to more and more valuable players. And this week is kind of like the defensive tackle position. We're going to hit a few through the rest of the show. Let's start with Keziah Izard, though. Listed at 6'3", 295, defensive tackle. He got a lot of playing time last year, especially with the issues with P.J. Mustafa being out the second half of the season. And you have a situation, remember, at defensive tackle where everything is new. You had Mustafa out for the end of last year. You lost your other tackle. Position's wide open, and it's not just the first two guys. There's at least a four-man rotation here going on. Where does Izzard fit into this mix?
I think he's one guy that I would say just don't overlook him. You know, I think it's easy to look at, let's say, Devon Ellis. It's easy to look at Hakeem Beamon. We'll do that. Zane Durant is turning heads. But I feel like Keziah Izard maybe isn't quite getting his due as a kid with a nice athletic pedigree coming out. I believe he had an Alabama offer coming out of high school. So that speaks to maybe the physical ability, the length and the strength. I feel like he, more than anybody else, you know, the situation at defensive tackle last year called for both Keziah Izard and Devon Ellis to play more than they would have otherwise. Those two guys are at the top of the list. And, you know, I think you could kind of sense that they grew up from the beginning of last year to the end of last year. And now you have a situation where now you can use that as a springboard into the future. And you can, you know, really have an up close and personal look at what you need to improve, what you need to do differently, how you need to get stronger, what you need to do in the weight room. So I feel like he really is a guy who, A, was a highly touted recruit, B, you know, we hadn't talked about him a whole lot prior to this, but he was just a redshirt freshman last year. Now in year three, I feel like he's a candidate to make that year three leap. And, you know, it's easy to talk about some of the other guys. I just feel like you need to keep an eye on him. You know, 21 tackles last year. He started seven games. He had two sacks. He forced a fumble. He had a nice little stretch there as a guy who needed to play big-time reps. And I feel like he saw, you know, he's 6'3", 296. I feel like he probably saw, like, in the Illinois game, for example, okay, I've got to be able to hold up to single, double teams, whatever, and be able to you know, free up the linebackers to make plays. That's going to be really important for that whole group. But I like Keziah Izard, and I just don't want to see him not talked about very much.
And is he not one of those players that it's an example of, as you mentioned, he's in his third year in the program. It seems like he's been here a long time, hasn't made his mark yet, and so it's easy for fans to just bypass him for the next shiny new thing coming in. And the fact is, he's got 3 more years of eligibility left. And, you know, if he steps up this year, this is a guy who could conceivably be a 3-year starter.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I feel like, yes, Hakeem Beamon and Zane Durant both bring sort of that undersize, quickness, explosion that you can't really get anywhere else. But I feel like Keziah Izzard will make more plays like that this year and just be a more well-rounded tackle. And what I might end up seeing is being able to mix and match who brings what to the table. You know, I think a situation where you can play P.J. Mustafa and either Devon Ellis or Keziah Izzard on rundowns, and you'd be able to bring in Zane Durant on passing downs. I think they have the ingredients here to be able to get that kind of thing done. But I do feel like, obviously, P.J. Mustafa is P.J. Mustafa. You lean on him. He's going to be a game wrecker in more ways than one. But I do think Keziah Izzard has more to show when it comes to the disruption, the tackles for loss, the ability to make plays in the backfield. I feel like he is a very well-rounded tackle prospect, and last year can really benefit him a lot. In year two as a defensive tackle, especially somebody who I believe he was initially listed by Penn State as a defensive end before they changed that designation. So year two as a once listed defensive end who needed to bulk up, you know, I think it's promising that he held his own last year, and I think he can do more than that.
And you still have a question mark around P.J. Mustafa. He's coming off of a serious enough injury that when it happened, it was like, that's it. He's done for the rest of the season in 2021. So you're not quite sure you're going to get a full-time, every-down P.J. Mustafa. And if that's the situation, Keziah Izzard may be the guy to fill the void.
Early in the year, I would absolutely anticipate that you're probably going to have a pretty short, pretty strict pitch count for P.J. Mustafa for at least the first game or two until you feel confident that he can play more, that he can handle more, that his conditioning is up to where it needs to be. And in the meantime, if there's a gap that has to be bridged, you know, I think you're going to see Keziah Izzard and Devon Ellis are the two most known commodities outside of P.J. Mustafa on this roster. And I like Devon Ellis. I like the other guys, but I feel like Keziah Izzard's got more for us this year, and you might need to see that pretty early in the season.
Okay, now we're going to really shift gears on you, Dustin, as we follow the KSN Top 40. Keziah Izzard we had at number 30. At number 29, we have tight end Brenton Strange. He is, I'm going to say, tentatively the starter. But really, you have 1A, 1B, 1C, I believe, among the tight ends. And Brenton Strange, although the starter, may be the least exciting of the three.
Well, that's for sure. And in that respect, similar to Keziah Izzard, where there are shinier, more athletic toys that you might want to play with. And the beauty of the tight end position is that all three of these guys can play. All of them will play. They'll be a package deal a lot of times. Brenton Strange, his experience, his willingness and ability to block, the veteran leadership that he brings to the table. It's hard for me to imagine that he gets unseated as a starter. But, I mean, I think if you're going to pair him with Theo Johnson, for example, he's also a much better candidate to do more of the dirty work and let Theo Johnson sort of focus on, you know, all the mismatches that he presents down the field, down the seam, in the intermediate passing game. So Brenton Strange, he's probably the most well-rounded of the tight ends. He was the team's fourth leading receiver last year. Not that that was a huge feat, but 20 catches, 225 yards, 3 touchdowns. I feel like, and I don't have all the specific examples, but there were more than a couple plays that you hoped that Brenton Strange would have made in the second half of last season that he didn't make. I think he's got to make more of those plays if he wants to maintain the same kind of snap volume that he's getting, because Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren are going to make their case to play more. And Brenton Strange, I suspect, will remain the starter throughout that entire stretch. And they're going to appreciate and like his blocking. But I think that he's got to hold those guys off. You might just see those other two carve out a bigger share of the snaps and a bigger share of the work in the passing game. But still, Brenton Strange is an important figure in this tight end group and an important figure in this offense. That is a real strength, the tight end position at large, and he's the most veteran member of it.
You get the feeling he will get the first go at it, at least at the start of the season. But obviously, as you said, all three will play. But you also get the sense that last year the tight end position was underutilized for the talent that they have there. And remember how much the Penn State coaching staff bragged about the tight end room. Is this maybe just a case where Mike Yurcich really needs to figure out what he has with his tight ends and how best to use all three of them?
I think this year, this offseason more so than any other, you know, you figure logically last winter, last spring, last summer, there's a lot of work to be done in terms of communicating with the quarterback and making sure that the leader of your offense is up to speed. You know what you have in Jahan Dotson and Parker Washington. You didn't really know the full extent of what you had at tight end. So if you didn't really go into training camp with the aim of prioritizing these guys because you weren't sure exactly what you had, then that's what you get, you know, as what happened last year. But now I think you can definitely look at this whole trio and feel like they need to be prioritized a little bit more. And I think, you know, I think he's fluid enough as a play caller to recognize that, especially with a full offseason to study the whole body of work, all the plays that he called, all the offense's tendencies, work with Sean Clifford again, be able to kind of intimately see what he's got at the tight end position. I do feel like the tight end, especially with Jahan Dotson moving on, you'll see the tight end play a little bit bigger role. But, you know, to spread that love around and have all those guys, you know, they might all be 250 yards, 300 yards receiving. I don't think you'll see any one of these three individuals have a monster statistical season because that love will be spread around the position.
There's no problem with doing that, Dustin, if you get combined out of the three of them 900 yards from the tight end position. I think you're going to walk away happy.
I do too. And I feel like you're going to get a little bit more of that. You're going to see Tyler Warren more involved. I think you have to look at what Theo Johnson was able to do, making big plays down the field, and want more of that. His size and his frame, it differs from what Mitchell Tinsley and Parker Washington bring to the table. So you get those two guys more volume, and I think you'll probably get there, that 900 plus yards combined.
Dusty, that's it for quarter number two. In quarter number three, we continue the countdown, and again, we're going to have one offensive player and one defensive player. Stay tuned for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results. Located right here in State College, we specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's T-E-K results.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Hawkinsmith. And we're smack dab, well, not in the middle, but into our KSN Top 40 countdown. If you haven't heard the previous shows, where have you been? You've missed great stuff. We are counting down the 40 most important players for the Penn State 2022 season. Once more, Dustin, I don't have in front of me the list, so we're not going to count down who we missed. Although earlier today, we took care of Keziah Izzard at number 30. Tight end Brenton Strange was number 29. Now we move to a guy at number 28. And it's offensive guard Landon Tengwall. He's 6'6", 326. Dustin, very seldom do you get a lot of value placed on a guard, especially one who hasn't, he's not a returning starter, a returning captain, or anything like that. With that said, I kind of sense that 28 may be too low for him.
It might end up being that way. And again, I mean, there's still a position battle ahead. And I think it's going to behoove everyone on the Penn State coaching staff to sink or swim with this guy. And I think you're going to swim. You know, I think one thing from a general offensive line standpoint is that I think the temperament and the mindset has to be different and it has to be better. And I think Landon Tengwall has the right temperament, the right confidence, the right mindset to bring a little bit more of an edge at the guard spot. And I think you can say the same thing about Juice Scruggs. He was, I feel like, Penn State's most aggressive offensive lineman last year. Somebody who's going to want to maul his way downfield in the run game. I think Landon Tengwall's got a little bit of that. And then let's say it's Hunter Norzad at the other guard spot. I feel like he's got that edge about him too. And now maybe you've got something. So I think, you know, oftentimes the difference between, you know, bad and mediocre, between mediocre and average, average and good the whole way through can be just the collective communication, confidence, and intangible stuff. And I like what Landon Tengwall brings to the table. I feel like with that length and with that size, I never really looked at him coming out of high school as a lockdown left tackle, play it in the league type guy. I think at this level, he's capable of playing tackle. And at some point in the future, maybe that ends up happening again. But as of now, guard looks like to be an open spot. I would say I would pencil him in as the favorite to win one of those guard jobs. And now, I mean, for the first, how many guys has Penn State brought along on the offensive line that you are thoroughly, legitimately excited about what they bring to the table? And I think that's something that Landon Tengwall does for the fans. Not that the coaching staff really is concerned about what the fans are thinking or feeling about that. But, you know, with the way that the offensive line has been perceived, I think a little jolt of enthusiasm, a little jolt of excitement for everybody is a good thing. And that's what Landon Tengwall brings. I think he's a really good player. Got his feet wet and held his own at tackle last year. Transitioned and practiced at guard leading up to the bowl game. And now has had a whole offseason to really focus on that and prepare himself for that. I think he's going to be a good player who obviously is only going to get better.
And Dustin, last season when he got his toe in the water playing left tackle, I know I thought, okay, come the bowl game with Rashid Walker out, here we're going to see Landon Tengwall as the next left tackle. And when it was announced Fashanu was going to be the starting left tackle, what I was really pleased about it was I thought Tengwall could be a good left tackle for the coaching staff to say, hey, we got another guy who we think would be better placed there. I get the sense that Tangwall is going from what would have been a good tackle to a really good guard.
I think that's a fair assessment of the situation. And I think some of his strengths as a player coming out of high school was that his body was tailor-made to play, you know, a number of positions, but it was ready last year. He was big into weightlifting and technique stuff. You know, he was polished and strong, and he carries 326 like it's 280. So, and I do feel like, especially right now, Landon Tangwall is going to fare better anchoring and going one-on-one, especially in pass protection, with a bigger, stronger guy than he is a 6'3", 250-pound edge rusher who can come screaming off the edge. I just don't see a lot of lateral quickness and really light, nimble feet. And it's not a knock on him. I think it's just part of the package deal where he was a high-floor player where I don't know if his ceiling was quite, you know, left tackle territory. If you need him to play that spot, he will. But I think for the future, he might be better served being a guard slash right tackle. Once he gets really acclimated to playing this position and getting used to, you know, the close proximity when he does it, I think he's going to be a really good guard. I do feel like that's going to happen pretty early in the 2022 season. Like, I don't think the moment's too big for him. And that's where I think the temperament and the mindset thing comes in. Like, I think he's got the mindset, he's got the mental game of a winner. And I think they needed that.
I get that feeling, that good feeling of you've got two young guys kind of coming up together in Fashanu and Tangwall to anchor that left side for a couple seasons together. And I'm excited about those two playing together, Dusty.
And you can see that for the next 2 to 3 years. And I think along those lines, it's a good point, is that Landon Tangwall having tackle experience, you know, being the bridge of communication between Juice Scruggs, making the communication and the calls to left tackle, he's going to be able to relate to what Olu Fashanu is seeing and what he's doing. And I think it just gives them just a little bit better chance of working together and being a unit, being a team on that left side of the line. Because, again, that's an important thing, too, is making sure that he is on the same page with both his center and left tackle. I think the fact that he's played multiple positions helps with that.
All right, Dusty, let's get to number 27 on our list, which is defensive end Nick Tarburton, listed at 6'3", 255. He's battled injuries, you know, through his first couple years at Penn State. Had pretty much the starting position last year at defensive end. And this is probably going to be damning him with faint praise, but he seems that high floor, low ceiling kind of guy as far as a defensive end.
I think that's fair. And how far we've come over the course of about a year or so, where now, I mean, you can definitely make the case that Nick Tarburton is the most known commodity that they've got at defensive end. Obviously, we've heard about Adisa Isaac, and we've heard everybody talk about him. We just haven't seen that a ton in games, and he missed all of last season, so there are questions about that. Obviously, there's still questions about Nick Tarburton long-term health-wise. He hadn't been able to stay on the field much prior to last season. Was that last season, was he turning a corner where now we can just kind of take for granted that he's going to stay healthy or not? And then obviously, you know, Smith Vilbert behind him, Amin Vanover behind him. You've got a true freshman and Dennis Sutton. You've got a kid coming over in Chop Robinson from Maryland, who's going to be making a transition from, you know, a hybrid role to more of a defensive end. You know, Nick Tarburton is the steady hand in all of this. And I think, you know, there's value in that this year. You're not really going to ask him to come screaming off the edge. You're not going to expect him, you know, to go one-on-one and beat an elite offensive tackle in the passing game. But he's going to make the right play. He's going to make the right read. He's going to take pride in defending the run. He's going to take pride in setting the edge and all the dirty work that you can sort of forget about at defensive end. He's going to be good in all those roles. And I think when an opportunity comes to make a play, he's going to make it. You know, you look at what he did last year, not terribly productive, but 4.5 tackles for loss, 2 pass breakups, you forced a fumble. I mean, it was good enough. I think his role's got to grow a little bit. I think he's got to be more productive Obviously, being on the field for one full spring, all of training camp last year, all of last season, and then all through this offseason, it all helps with the continuity of his game and being able to build on what he did last year. I think they're really going to need it. And then if some of these other things don't work out, then they're really, really going to need it. So if Nick Tarburton's health is an important thing here, he's a guy like, you know, you're not going to look for 10 sacks from him. You know, if he gets 4 sacks, I think that's probably a pretty nice year for him. But he's going to do a lot of things to help steady the ship when there are, frankly, a lot of moving parts around him.
A couple thoughts on this, Dusty. The defensive end position, we're talking about a rotation of 4 or 5 guys. Just like you talked about with the tackle position, is this a case where you're going to mix and match? But let's also remember that Manny Diaz, when asked about his pass coverage, said the best pass coverage was pressure on the quarterback. It sounds like he expects his defensive ends to get to the quarterback, and I'm not sure when I say Nick Tarburton, I think there's an edge rusher who's going to put some heat on the quarterback.
Which is funny for a guy who was initially a linebacker, right? So the guy making the transition from linebacker to defensive end, you're just not sure if he's quick enough to make an impact in that regard. So it could go one of two ways. I mean, if Manny Diaz recognizes something that he didn't really display last season and he's asked to do more of that, okay. Or probably more likely is you're going to see Nick Tarburton more on running downs, and you're going to see some of these other guys on passing downs. And then you've also got some versatile type interior guys too, where maybe you can kind of mix and match and get Hakeem Beamon out wide on a 3-man front. Like, you've got some options there. I feel like Nick Tarburton is going to be more of your run game specialist, and you're going to unleash some of these more elite physical tools from some of these other guys in obvious passing situations. That seems like the play. Unless Nick Tarburton has done more work in the weight room, has gotten quicker, maybe he's going to be asked to do that. But I feel like you're looking at maybe more like a 2-down defensive end here.
What you're getting is solid and steady. And with the other guys, you have the potential for the big play that you just not sure you're going to get from Nick Tarburton.
And there are good things and there are bad things that come with that. And maybe we're underestimating how Nick Tarburton can develop. I think you just kind of can't, with a lot of these guys, you can't just assume what you saw last year is what's going to show up again. Maybe he gets a little bit better, and that's enough to make more plays in the passing game. I'll be suspicious of that until I see it, though.
But you also think this isn't a guy who's going to make that mistake that's going to hurt you. So with all the experience he has and the lack of experience any other defensive ends have, I suspect he will get the first shot at it. Dustin, that's it for quarter number 3. Stick around. We've got an interesting duo of players for quarter number 4. Stay tuned for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State-Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Hawkinsmith. And Dustin, we're going through our top 40 most important players on the Penn State roster going into the 2022 season. We're doing the countdown. We're just like a modern version, a modern day Casey Kasem doing the countdown. So, and we're having also, just like he did, that little story with each player, just like he did with the top 40 countdown. So pretty impressive, isn't it?
Eat your heart out, Casey Kasem.
All right, and you know what? I'm sure we have some young listeners who are going, who in the world and what in the world are those guys talking about? Go Google it, what you young kids do. Isn't that what they do, Dusty?
Yeah, use your Google machine and search it.
Yes. Go look it up on the interweb, Dusty. We are up to numbers 26 and 25, and I'm going to do something a little different this time around. I'm going to lump them together, okay? This is a theme segment, and the theme is defensive tackle, and we're going to talk about two guys who were not in uniform last season, and they are true freshman defensive tackle Zane Durant, 6'1", 260, who's making an absolute name for himself. He enrolled early. He was there for spring practice, which was great, and the coaches loved him. They raved about him. And then we're going to hit Akeem Beeman, 6'3", 276, who we still don't know why, but he did not play last year. So, Dusty, let's start with Zane Durant. He's probably on the defensive side of the ball, especially without Denai Dennis Sutton showing up yet. Is he the most exciting true freshman coming in this season?
The most exciting true freshman that enrolled in January, for sure. And he got that opportunity to create a little additional buzz because there weren't a whole lot of defensive guys who enrolled early, so he had that going for him. You know, Dennis Sutton is special in his own right, but Zane Durant, you know, had a chance. And the other thing is Dennis Sutton is going to – he arrives with five-star acclaim and expectations. Zane Durant had a little bit of a pocket there to exceed expectations because he wasn't really viewed as a prime-time member of this class when you have Drew Aller and Nick Singleton and Dennis Sutton, Caden Saunders. You know, you have a lot of electric-type athletes, but – you know, that was one thing that happened in the winter and the spring is that he really showed he deserves to be in that company. And, you know, being 6'1", 265 now, he's a unique player. And that's why we're lumping these two guys together, both unique players in that regard who have to be lumped together when you look at, okay, who's going to play and in what situations are these guys going to play? The answer might be one or the other in some of those situations. So Zane Durant, you know, I feel like has taken a very professional type approach to his football development and his studies. He seems to be very, very serious about the work he's doing, whatever he's doing. And I think that helps ease the transition. It allowed him to be able to thrive immediately in all kinds of ways. And I think he's got some uncommon strength and power for that frame of his. So he is directly in the middle of the conversation when you're talking about the defensive tackle rotation, and for good reason. And one guy that keeps coming up is Kevin Givens. And the where Zane Durant and Kevin Givens really differ is that Zane Durant comes in at more of a defensive tackle size, and you know what his role is from the jump, as opposed to Kevin Givens, who was some kind of linebacker or defensive end who just skyrocketed about 60 pounds, it seems, in year two. So Zane Durant is a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of his development at defensive tackle, his frame, and things like that. So 6'1", 265, I think is enough for the way that he plays to see the field. And, you know, there are some questions at defensive tackle. There's going to be a need to be disruptive at defensive tackle. You're going to try to get some of that production at all those spots along the line. Zane Durant, you know, former linebacker, he plays that way. He's very quick, seems to have a really good idea how to use his leverage. All the things that you need to have to thrive as an undersized defensive tackle, he seems to have.
Don't you just see him also as the perfect complement to P.J. Mustipher, you know, the big guy who's going to occupy people, while here this very athletic guy, you know, he's not the tallest, he's not the heaviest, as you said, he had experience playing linebacker, but this is a guy who has that explosiveness that from the middle of the line, he can do that penetration into the backfield, he can do something special, while the big guy is occupying people.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, it makes you think about these different type scenarios. I don't know if the coaching staff is thinking about it in these terms, but just think about, you know, a third and nine and being able to get Zane Durant and Hakeem Beamon on the field at the same time in a package like this. I feel like, you know, one thing that they both do pretty well, Tyreek Blanding, the recent commit in the 23 class, his film kind of shows the same thing, is being able to maintain a low pad level. It's hard for some of these big guys in the interior to match that, being able to stay low and get up under offensive linemen. That's something that Zane Durant and Hakeem Beamon both, I think, are going to do well, but especially Zane Durant, where he can win that physical matchup. He can win with strength because he's got a little bit of a leverage advantage. You know, I think he's going to be able to hold up against the run, but you're going to be able to get creative with both of these guys in terms of how you use them against the pass, what their role ends up being. My anticipation is that Zane Durant is not going to play a hefty number of snaps because you're probably not going to need that. You know, thinking about, you know, the other big guys they've got, Devon Ellis, Keziah Izzard, P.J. Mustipher. I don't think you're going to ask Zane Durant to play 40 snaps a game, but I think he's going to be impactful when he does see the field.
And you talked about getting the pads lower when you're, I'll say, only 6'1". You're already closer to the ground. You know, you're already starting out lower than those offensive linemen, and you have a chance to use that to your own benefit. Interesting player. He'll be very fun to watch. Speaking of fun to watch, we've been talking about him a little bit. Hakeem Beamon, who you have listed as number 24, listed at 6'3", 276. There was some excitement and buzz for him prior to the 21 season. We know he didn't play last year. So being out of full season, what are you expecting from him, Dusty?
I don't know what to expect from him because I don't know what the full story is for last year. You know, the way that they phrase, you know, his absence last year, it's not season-ending injury. It seems more disciplinary or more mental or something along those lines. But he was not either in the coaching staff's favor or not available to play for reasons that they won't share. So where is he with that? You know, without knowing the nature of the issue, I don't know the nature of what to expect, but he has hung around. He stuck around. He is on the roster now. He looked like his arrow was pointed up as a redshirt freshman, just like we talked about with Keziah Izzard earlier. A little bit later in that year, you saw him make a few plays. You saw him be able to penetrate. You saw him, you know, with that undersized frame, being able to make a range of plays that maybe some other guys aren't able to make. And so you expected between 2020 and 2021 that he had a chance to break out. Just whatever was going on prevented that from happening. So this could just be a delay from that. It looked like he was able to keep his head in the game. It looked like morale seems to be okay. So as long as all those things are true, you know, I'm willing to press pause from the excitement from 2020 and carry that into 2022. Just like Zane Durant, I think Zane Durant might be a little bit better in terms of engaging with guards, not necessarily just winning with quickness, but being able to win with some power. That'll obviously come more as he gets a little bit bigger, where I think Beeman can just shoot gaps unlike anybody else that they've got at defensive tackle. So you talk about, you know, if he makes his share of contributions at the tackle position, that can go a long way toward alleviating any questions or any concerns about this group as a whole. Gives them more opportunities to mix and match. You've got your two biggest guys, Devon Ellis and PJ Mustipher. You've got Keziah Izzard, who's a pretty versatile in terms of size, strength, and speed. And then you've got your quick guys, Zane Durant and Hakeem Beeman. And you have some options if both of these guys are kind of firing at full capacity this fall. But I'm expecting Hakeem Beeman to come back. But just, you know, I think with him, just got to see it before I believe it.
And by putting these two guys together, you know, on the list at 26 and 25, Dusty, next to each other, it's okay. They both have that interesting high side. But they both have those question marks that I wouldn't be surprised if either or both of them make a real impact. But I'm not sure I'd be all that surprised if, well, Zane Durant isn't quite ready yet as a true freshman. And that Hakeem Beeman isn't quite ready to come back after forgetting what the issue was. I don't care. It doesn't matter right now. But he also didn't play all last year. So are you automatically going to come back and be where you were prior to missing a season? I just don't know.
Yeah, and I think the question is, like, you can probably feel pretty good with these guys that you're going to go 1-for-2. How likely is Penn State to go 2-for-2? That's the nature of your question there. How are they able to go 2-for-2 with these guys and, you know, not playing in any games for a year? There's going to be a rust factor, a rust concern, game shape concern, whatever. And then a true freshman who's undersized at defensive tackle is such a rarity in college football. It's a rarity for Penn State. There are some variables that come with that. But Zane Durant looks like a special guy when it comes to his mindset. I think he can overcome that. Hakeem Beeman is unbelievably quick. So if he's able to kind of keep his head on the straight and narrow, I mean, I think there's a decent chance they go 2-for-2. And then, by the way, Fatoma Mulba and Jordan Vandenberg are interesting depth pieces where, you know, nothing's going to be handed to either one of these guys. Those guys are probably good enough and far long enough that they're going to be able to push these two, Beeman and Zane Durant, for playing time.
And depth is so important there, Dustin, where you want to rotate and be at least two deep, maybe even a fifth guy that you want as part of the rotation. There's a lot of different possibilities there. All right, Dusty, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results. Located right here in State College, we specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.